Oh, well, after my brief sojourn of hosting solo, flying close to the sun by myself with no parachute, producer John was back to hold my hand once again.
I think we all just got mildly concerned when you were talking to yourself about Fun Fact Friday.
It only took one day.
Yeah, so I was like, I've got to come back to save him from himself.
Welcome back. It is lovely to have you here.
It is great to be here.
Emma is still unwell, but hopefully she will be back sometime in the next couple of days. But without further ado, let's launch into things, shall we? Kia ora, this is Newsable, I'm Emil.
And I'm Jono, and this is What's Worth Talking About. The housing market may have hit rock bottom, so does that mean now's the time to buy?
Also, is artificial intelligence the solution to reining in social media abuse?
A Russian private military group might be doing something in New Zealand's territory.
And how handsome are you? Are you good looking enough to be a doll or a bear? We'll explain all.
All that coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Hey, here's a thrillingly grown-up question to ask on a Thursday morning. Has the housing market bottomed out? Is now the optimal time to buy? We are asking this because several recent reports have suggested house prices have hit their nadir, and with new LVR rules coming into effect today, the landscape does appear to be changing rapidly. Susan Edmonds is Stuff's business editor, and she is with us now to discuss. Kia ora to you.
Good morning.
What is the top line here, Susan? Is it true that house prices have bottomed out?
Well, that's one of those things that you never really know until you're looking in hindsight, I suppose. But we are seeing that sort of momentum growing and more people saying that was probably about as low as prices were going to go. This morning, we've had that again from CoreLogic. And I mean, they have fallen a long way. They're down, well, by CoreLogic's measure, they're down 10.2% nationally, but a lot more than that in Wellington and in Auckland.
Is there a possibility that people with vested interests are trying to talk this into being, or am I being too conspiratorial there?
Well, I mean, that's a fair question. We have heard it from a lot of real estate agents, but we've also heard it from people who don't necessarily have that vested interest. So I think probably the weight of evidence is starting to show that things are turning. You know, interest rates probably as high as they're going to go for now. We've actually seen some come off a little bit. The pace of decline in prices has slowed quite a lot. And the big thing is that we've got this really big surge in migration, and those people are going to have to find somewhere to live.
Yeah, I mean, let's get into sort of the known unknowns here that do affect the prices of property, because there are quite a few on the horizon, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. And one of them is migration, because we know that there's been a big surge. But one of the funny things about our migration stats is we don't have a clear view of who's coming in for, I think Sharon Zollner calls it a good time or a long time. So we're assuming that all the people who are coming in are here for a long time, but some of them might not be. And the other thing that's really important is the election, because a lot of investors are kind of, from what I can see, hanging back and waiting to see whether National will get in, because there's this interest deductibility question. So Labor's phasing out their ability to deduct interest costs from their rental income to when they go to their tax bills. But National would reverse that, which would, especially in this high interest rate environment, would be quite a big difference to their costs.
As I mentioned in the intro, we also have some changes to LVRs, loan-to-value ratios, which are taking effect today. Can you explain what are LVRs and what are the changes that are coming in?
So the loan-to-value restrictions were first introduced as a way to kind of enhance the stability of the banking sector, because the idea was that they wanted to reduce the number of people that had really big mortgages compared to the value of their properties. So they kind of tweak these every time they think that things are getting too frothy. Relatively minor changes, I would say. Banks are allowed to lend a little bit more of their new lending to owner-occupiers who have less than 20% equity. The investor cutoff used to be 40%, and now it's 35%.
What about the construction sector at the moment?
Yeah, so we saw consents decline actually this month, and that's, I mean, it was booming for a while, and now it does seem to be coming off. And the question that people are starting to ask is, well, is that going to be a problem? Because if people are coming into the country en masse, are we building enough houses? And for a while it looked like we were keeping up, but now maybe that's turning around.
This is an interesting one. This is like a mystery stew of unknown factors and maybes and ifs and buts and minor changes aimed at making things easier for first home buyers, but relatively minor ones. So I guess, you know, if the $1 million question is now the time to buy, your answer seems to be, we're not really sure.
Yeah, I think that's always my answer. because I guess the last couple of years have shown us that it shouldn't be a short-term decision anyway, and you should always buy with a long-term kind of plan in place. So if you can afford it and you see a house you like, then I think it's always a good time to buy.
Stuff's Business Oracle. Susan Edmonds, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Alrighty, social media and mental health is a difficult and sometimes dangerous relationship. Online bullying is pretty much everywhere, affecting all sorts of people in different ways, and that includes top athletes. So now, one of the big tennis competitions of the year, the French Open, is using AI to fight back. Senior tennis correspondent Emile Donovan has been investigating this. Emile, what's going on?
Thank you for my new promotion, by the way.
My pleasure.
So, yeah, as you mentioned, there's this big tennis tournament coming up, the French Open. It's one of the four Grand Slams. This, of course, brings a lot of attention, and particularly online attention, to the players. And a lot of it is quite unsavoury, you would have to say. There's a lot of racist abuse, a lot of homophobic abuse. People can be arseholes. We know this. And all sports are grappling with this at the moment. But the tournament administrators have done something quite novel. They have turned to the power of AI to try to deal with this online bullying.
Mental health and stress have really been kind of top of mind for tennis recently, haven't they?
Yeah, particularly with Naomi Osaka, the Japanese-American player who actually had to withdraw from several tournaments because of the mental health impact that it was having on her. Players as well, besides Osaka, have frequently highlighted the abuse that they get. Also, it's a very lonely sport, tennis. You play it alone. You have a very close relationship with your coach, of course, but, you know, it's solitary. You have to fly all over the world. You're often staying by yourself in hotel rooms all around the world. The employment conditions are not especially favourable. So, yeah, tennis is basically said to be one of the worst affected sports. Another element to this as well is betting. So a lot of this abuse comes from people who lost bets on games. Tennis is a very heavily betted on game, and it's people who lost money basically venting and not realising that, yes, there is actually a human being who is reading these messages that you're sending them.
I think the most surprising thing about that is that people are betting on tennis.
Yeah, people bet on anything, man.
So this sounds great, like using AI to help fight bullying, but how does it actually work?
So it's a system called Bodyguard. It's a piece of technology. It's quite an appropriate name, really. The developers say it is the first initiative of its kind. I understand you scan a QR code and it uses AI. The AI jumps into action and it filters out abusive comments on a big range of platforms. So it does Insta and TikTok and Twitter. And it can also moderate comments in real time. The developers reckon the responses are analysed in less than 200 milliseconds, which is very fast.
That is very, very quick. So does it use like the words or the, how does it judge what's abuse and what's not?
So it all comes back to people, obviously. Mm. There's a team of linguists, language specialists, who have created word patterns and fed them into this AI. So the players basically scan the QR code at the tournament before checking out their social media. The linguists have programmed all of the algorithms and the magic, and then it does its thing and takes all of the nasty stuff out. So it's a really interesting idea. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully it's successful, because this is something that athletes across all sports have to deal with. It's not fair. They are doing this, you know, for our entertainment, and so anything that can help combat bullying in this area is welcome from my point of view.
Well said. I agree.
Hey, Chris, what sort of facts do you know about animals?
I know that you like them.
Ding, ding, ding. I sure do. That is correct, except birds. As you all know, I hate birds. Not a fan.
You fur, not feathers.
Fan of the fur, yes.
I also know that koalas are the only non-primates with fingerprints.
Oh, it's a fun fact.
It is, they're marsupials, aren't they? And apparently, even under a microscope, their prints are hard to distinguish from humans' prints.
I suppose it's never going to be a problem unless koalas decided to dip their toes and dabble in a bit of crime.
Well, I don't know when they're going to do it. They sleep 20 hours a day.
Yeah, there's a short window of awake time, isn't it? And they move pretty slowly. It'd have to be very, very thought out and planned.
We arrested three koalas after a slow speed chase.
They fell asleep afterwards because they didn't do it soon enough in the 4-hour window.
For all the weird and wonderful facts you didn't know you wanted, listen to the Big Stuff Quiz wherever you get your podcasts.
And as bizarre as it sounds, koalas and crime will help you with this week's questions.
Big Stuff Quiz is proudly brought to you by Melbourne. Every bit different.
Here is a strange, bizarre yarn for you. There are concerns that a Russian private military company may have some mysterious and as yet unknown interests in Aotearoa's backyard. Yeah, this is all about an organisation called the Wagner Group. Stuff's reporter James Halpin's been looking into it, and he joins us now to discuss. Hello.
Hello, Emil. How are you?
I am excellent, thank you. Can you please briefly explain to us, what is the Wagner Group?
Wagner is a private military company, a PMC, that's a privately owned army, cropped up in 2014. They were the Russians that took over the Crimean Peninsula when Russia first invaded. Uh-huh. And since then, they've been operating in Africa, propping up governments as well as operating as security workers. And they have been integral to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. They've been the main force in Bakhmut, which is that city that that Russia has just taken.
Okay. What the hell? There are such things as private armies.
Yeah, I know. You think it was gone in the past, but so did everybody think about European land wars, and they come back. It's owned by a guy called Yevgeny Prigozhin, uh-huh. known as Putin's chef. He's an oligarch, and he came up with Putin. He's from St. Petersburg uh-huh. as well. And he came up owning a whole lot of food businesses. He served Putin food at state banquets, but has then since tried to diversify, you might call it, into other
And other boy, businesses. Has he diversified.
Yeah, yeah. You don't think there's a big link between the food industry and private armies?
Private armies? There is. There you go, yeah. Okay, so why are we talking about the Wagner Group in New Zealand? What is the connection here?
Yeah, so just after they won in Bakhmut, Yevgeny Prigozhin has been really active on social media. He did a video, an interview with a person, and just behind him on the wall in this sort of nondescript office was a world map. And all these little pins on the world map, which seemed to indicate where Wagner was operating. Little red pins for where they seemed to be, have troops and were fighting in places like Mozambique and Sudan. And a whole lot of white pins in places around Africa, largely. Now, one of those white pins was completely rogue from Africa on the other side of the world in the little old Chatham Islands.
The Chatham Islands! Wild!
Absolutely wild. Now, there was no discussion in this interview about the context of that, why that pin was in the Chatham Islands. When I first saw it, I thought it was fake. Maybe it was a bit of blurring on the video that had happened, or someone had altered an image and then posted it on social media. But no, it was a pin in the Chatham Islands, and it's a complete mystery.
What are the working theories that you've come across in your reporting on this?
There's sort of two main theories. One is that they own some sort of asset in the Chatham Islands. I'm yet to prove what that is, but I think that's possibly the most logical thing, possibly some land or some sort of business mm-hmm. in the Chatham Islands. And I should be clear that there's no conclusive proof yet that they actually do have any business interests or otherwise in the Chatham Islands. The second one maybe is a bit more likely. And that is relating to the Cook Islands, which, as we all know, thousands of kilometres away. But if you were a Russian person on the other side of the world, maybe you would make that mistake. Now, the Cook Islands, what they do is they sell their flag to naval vessels around the world as a way of revenue mm-hmm. generating. So if you own a boat, you can buy the Cook Islands flag and hoist it on your boat and then use it to sail around the world as
right, and it looks like you're flying as a representative of the Cook Islands, but
yeah, and you're, but you're not. You're a private company, and you get all the rights that come associated with being a flagged vessel of a nation.
Right. Okay. And so the theory in this case is that the Wagner Group actually might have done that, and that they just mixed up the Cook Islands and the Chathams on a map.
Completely. Yeah. But again, no evidence. But there could be another explanation for why there is a pin in the little old Chathams.
James Halpin, thanks very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm Tova O'Brien, and this week on the Tova podcast from Stuff, interest rates and mortgage misery. The number of people falling behind on their payments has hit a near 4-year high. With the government promising to help the so-called squeezed middle in its looming first budget, we explore the issue from every angle. The property owners forced into life-changing decisions, a money advisor, the finance minister in charge of that budget, and an extended interview with the chief executive of one of our big five banks. Plus, a breakout shortcast coming soon, extra for experts, the state of the property markets and the role of the Reserve Bank with a former governor. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, producer Jono, as is self-evident by your presence on this podcast, you are back.
I am, with a vengeance.
But you were sick yesterday.
I was.
And while you were sick, like any good sick person does, you found yourself browsing the Daily Mail.
Clearly, my sickness had affected my brain, and I wandered into the depths of the internet, and I found some very interesting things, Emil.
Yes, you did. It's actually not as dodgy as it sounds, surprisingly, though it is still pretty dodgy. Tell us what you found.
I found that apparently there are four different types of handsomeness among the male population.
Okay.
I feel like this is the sort of content we need to analyse. Yeah. Turn our journalistic analytical skills to this.
All right, take me through the different types of handsomeness then, because they are all linked to things that people can picture in their mind's eye.
It feels a little bit David Attenborough, this, because they're all animals. So you've got eagle handsome. This is a man with strong features, a long nose, small eyes, maybe lighter hair and eyes. Mm-hmm. You have dog handsome, round face, dark hair and eyes. Bear handsome, rounder face, broad shoulders, light hair and eyes.
Okay.
And then this is the one I find weird, is reptilian handsome.
Right.
Because all I can think of is Professor Snape. But reptilian handsome is strong features, dark hair and eyes, and a straight nose.
I looked this up on Twitter when you sent it to us, and someone actually came up with some templates, some famous person templates for this. So they say eagle handsome's equivalent is Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, strong features, long nose, light hair.
The bear handsome is Henry Cavill.
Yep, that's rounder face, broad shoulders, old as Henry have broad shoulders. Light hair, and he's got quite dark hair, but I think, you know,
there's got to be some give and take, doesn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dog handsome, Heath Ledger was cited as this one.
Oh, yeah, rounder face, dark hair and eyes. Yeah.
And then reptile handsome, Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, he looks like a snake.
Yeah. Timothy Chalamet's a handsome man.
Yeah.
So reptile,
I mean,
doesn't...
he's no Henry Cavill.
Okay, so we're objectifying men now according to what their animal kingdom equivalents are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Analysing you from my perspective.
Oh, this could go so many ways.
I think you're a mixture of bear and dog.
So like, I've been called worse, I won't lie.
I'm interested in what listener conceptions of what you physically are like might be.
Because we've never actually put up a social video of me participating in this pod.
No.
So I'm merely a faceless voice to everyone out there.
Maybe we'll put some pics on the Instagram and people can say what they think we are. I think I'm probably reptile slash...
Oh, you're totally a reptile.
Listeners will be glad to hear that there is some semblance of egalitarianism here, because there are also apparently four different types of looks in women. Fox pretty... is the first one. Lighter hair, dark or light eyes, longer face and sharp features. Cat pretty, darker hair, light eyes, rounder face, sharp features. Deer pretty, which is darker hair, dark eyes, longer face and soft features. And bunny pretty, which is lighter hair, dark or light eyes, round face and soft facial features. Maybe we'll put my picture up on the Instagram and you can tell us which, if any, type of handsome I am. And also tell us what type of handsome you think you are. If you like, just head to our Instagram page. That is at NewsableNZ. But that is the show for today. I'm Emil Donovan.
And I'm Jono Williams.
If you enjoyed this episode, please do follow us on your favourite podcast player. Leave us a rating and a review. It helps other listeners to discover the show, and we just really appreciate it.
You can also follow us on social media to stay up to date on all of our new episodes, get some behind-the-scenes content, work out if Emil is handsome or not. And you can find us on Insta, TikTok, just by searching NewsableNZ.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day, and we'll catch you tomorrow.
Newsable, news that's worth talking about. If you liked it and reckon it's also worth supporting, please make a contribution at stuff.co.nz/support.